Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Monster guest list today, FAU going to the Sweet 16. Well, they'll have a matchup right here in our backyard at Madison Square Garden, and they'll be going up against Tennessee. Their head men's basketball coach, Dusty May, is going to join us 20 minutes from now. And then in hour number two, in back-to-back spots, we'll lead things off with Coach Greg McDermott over at Creighton, who will match up against Princeton, and their stud, Ryan Langborg, who was just sensational shooting the basketball up against Missouri as the Princeton Tigers in the Sweet 16. Both of those two gentlemen will join us. And then later on in the show, we still have a few more QB carousels to do. We'll chat a little bit about the Chargers today with Lorenzo Neal at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific. So a whole lot to do, but first up, producing the extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
Hot Take Hickey.
Okay, so we look at March Madness, and you see the 16 teams that are remaining, and you look on the right side of the bracket, Houston, Miami, Xavier, Texas, really no big surprises there. Then you go to the West. Okay, Arkansas beats Kansas. Arkansas, we all know what Musk could do with what he did at Nevada and then also what he's been doing at Arkansas. Even though I like Kansas and I thought they had a legit shot to get back to the Final Four, I can't say I'm stunned by that one. UConn getting to the Sweet 16, Gonzaga, UCLA, no big surprises there. But then you go to the left side of the bracket, and it's all chaos. FAU to the Sweet 16. Yeah, Tennessee getting there. A lot of people, including yours truly, did like Duke, and Tennessee was a much better basketball team. Kansas State, a team that I did like going into the tourney, but I did not feel good heading into the round of 32 matchup because I just thought Kentucky was starting to get into really good form. And then you have Michigan State taking care of Marquette. And I know we could all say, oh, it's Izzo, 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 but there's another side of it, and that is Shaka Smart. Just really, ever since that VCU Final Four run, just not delivering the way that we all thought he would deliver, even though this was a very successful year for Marquette, it does leave you with a bitter taste in your mouth because you definitely thought you had a realistic shot being a two seed in the NCAA tournament, winning the Big East, of going to the Final Four. And then in the upper left part of the bracket in the South, like you look at it, Alabama's road, I don't want to call any road easy this time of the year, but when you're sitting here with no Arizona and no Baylor, you got to feel pretty damn good. And, you know, Virginia did go down in the first round to Furman. You look at a matchup with San Diego State, who no one's talking about. I know Creighton is a big team, and they had big expectations before the year. And at one point, they lost six in a row. Then they lost back-to-back games in the Big East, and they were sitting at 9-8. And probably a lot of people did not think they would reach their potential. Now they're here in the Sweet 16. Like, I would think Creighton is going to beat Princeton, even though I really love this story of Princeton being a 15 seed, upsetting Arizona, and then just being the much better team and dominating Missouri. But I look at all four of these regions, Hickey, and I would say the team that I'm most confident in right now is Alabama to get there, and they probably do have the easiest road to the Final Four. But who knows with this NCAA tournament? And where I want to start today's show off with is just simply this. Like, let's just look at the East here real quickly. Because you could have three coaches right now that if you're a fan of that team, you have a legitimate gripe to be annoyed with what they did over the weekend. We were on the air when Fairleigh Dickinson, led by Tobin Anderson, defeated Matt Painter's squad in Purdue. And Purdue, you thought Arizona did an embarrassing job down the stretch, and you know, and they had a 10-point lead with 10 minutes to go. You thought Arizona up against Princeton was a choke job. I've never seen a team like Purdue, who is so much larger, and this was just coming off the night before saying this about Arizona, But Purdue is so much larger than Fairleigh Dickinson. And down the stretch in that game, they just couldn't get anything going in the paint. And it was almost as if you kind of saw a mental block from Purdue. And maybe they're starting to develop that reputation, because since 2011, I know Coach Painter has been at Purdue for a long time, but they've had five double-digit seed losses, you know, losses to double-digit seed teams. Fairleigh Dickinson, St. Peter's, North Texas, Little Rock, and then VCU. So you look at Purdue, and I know they just lost to St. Peter's last year, albeit that was in the Sweet 16, but that team, I have never seen a team basically play hot potato with the basketball like that. It seemed like any time they touched the ball late, it either went out of bounds or they just dropped the basketball, and Fairleigh Dickinson would capitalize. So that was a big reaction. We were on the air for that history on Friday night. But if you are Purdue, this is a season that had high expectations, right? They just found a way to win the Big Ten championship where, let's be real, they should have lost the game. They had a big lead. Penn State was pressing. Penn State almost won it and went on this great run. But Purdue in that Big Ten tournament, in that championship game, they were lucky, lucky to survive and win that. And I didn't like them going into the tournament. I had them losing to Memphis in the second round. I know Memphis loses to Florida Atlantic, but I didn't like what I saw from Purdue, even though they won that Big Ten championship and that Big Ten tournament. I didn't like what I saw in those final few minutes of that game. And you now look at Purdue and where they go from here. They are developing really a stigma that was similar to a few years ago with Virginia. And I know Virginia has had their own problems with double-digit seeds, right? Like, we've all seen them lose a bunch of times to double-digit seed teams, one being UMBC. But the next year, at least, Virginia with Tony Bennett was able to bounce back and win a championship. Like, Matt Painter, even though he's been around a lot longer and he's been the coach of the Boilermakers since 2005, he's starting to feel like he is Tony Bennett. But the one big difference is, at least Tony Bennett has a championship. Matt Painter does not have a championship. Now, I'm not sitting here and advocating for a firing. I'm not going there. But the pressure does pick up where you start to say, you've been there since 2005. You've been really, 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 really good. But these losses as of late are just inexcusable. And there's no way, and I know we all loved the run that Fairleigh Dickinson did go on, there's no way you should lose to that team. You just shouldn't. So that's where you start off in that East with Purdue, who's now donezo, and they were out of the first round. And then from there, you look at two other coaches, Calipari, and we all know he's won a championship at Kentucky, and he's had a lot of really good teams. But Hickey, I know we were talking about this on Friday, and it wasn't related to Coach Cal, but we were talking about like coaches that have won championship or players that have won championship and they leave you desiring more. I know Coach Cal, he went to a championship at Memphis. He had a Final Four team in UMass as well. But you look at Calipari, who early on this season, the Kentucky fan was done with him, and he saved the ship from sinking. Now, with his contract, you know he's not going anywhere. But to only have one championship with how much talent they have, and I know the players let him down, but you're going up against a team in Kansas State the other day who before the year, they were picked to finish dead last in their conference. And now Kansas State, who I like going into this tourney, I had them going to the Elite Eight, but when you make a prediction before the bracket starts and then you see the way that a team is starting to thrive, you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. That's what I felt going into that Kansas State game, that, oh, yeah, I'll probably be wrong on that and Kentucky will win. And then here you are where you see a Sweet 16 where four of the teams in the East in New York are Florida Atlantic, Tennessee, and Michigan State. If you're a Kentucky basketball fan, you got to be livid today. Sure, you tip your cap. You acknowledge the great story of Kansas State and Coach Tang and all that, but you got to be livid, because this is another year where it feels like your team should have done more. And just when it looked like the frustration from earlier in the season was starting to disappear, it pops up in the round of 32. And then I'll look at Marquette. I know we could all sit here and we could talk about the brilliance and the legacy and the just ridiculous career of Tom Izzo. And I know Rothstein does this all the time, January, February, Izzo. And when you go through all the months of the calendar year, and we know how just dominant Tom Izzo has been and how he finds the way to get the best out of his teams. But for Marquette, even though this was a wonderful year for that program, in year two of Shaka Smart at Marquette, and I know you win the Big East and you had all that success, and it should be remembered as a good season, it does leave you with a bitter taste in your mouth. Because you look at that East region, it's really, when you're looking at it, that's the one where you just say, how the heck did we get here? Like, I know Princeton is in the Sweet 16, but you look at that East region to have Purdue gone, Marquette gone, Kentucky gone, Duke gone as well. All four of those teams that I just mentioned, if I was able to get the data and the percentages of who would go to the Final Four out of the East, they got to be four out of the top five, right? To people that selected their brackets. But here we are sitting now, and you probably think, all right, Tennessee is going to the Final Four, but who knows? So that's a big takeaway from Friday through the weekend. There's a lot of disappointment with Calipari, and I'm usually a Coach Cal fan, but there's disappointment with Calipari, Matt Painter, and then Shaka Smart. And Hickey, if you remember when Shaka Smart went in that run at VCU and then stayed a few years, people were like talking about him, oh, he'll eventually replace Roy Williams at UNC. He'll eventually replace Coach K at Duke. Like, he's going to go to a blue blood program, and he goes to Texas, and he was a disaster at Texas, but he didn't take off with those resources like we expected. And yes, he goes to Marquette, you get some of that old vintage Shaka back, but ever since going to the Final Four, he kind of gives you that feel of, oh wow, you always got to watch out for a Shaka Smart team in March Madness, but the results just aren't there in the tourney. So to see where his career has gone, not that he's been a disaster, but a lot of people, including yours truly, thought he would have been a creme de la creme coach. And as I sit here right now, it just has not materialized the way that we thought it was. So that's probably my biggest takeaway, Hickey, from the weekend. It's just that East region of the bracket and the disappointment with Matt Painter, John Calipari, and then also Shaka Smart. Like Duke, I give them a pass. It's John Shire's first year as a coach. I know a lot of people thought they'd get to the Final Four heading into this tournament. But those three coaches, Calipari, Painter, and then Shaka, just left you saying, wow, their teams, Ryan, should have done a whole lot more in this tournament.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, Marquette is a very popular Final Four pick, and rightfully so, with how they played in the regular season, then winning the Big East tournament as well. They've been, you know, peaking at the right time, and you come in, and it's not just the fact they lost to Tom Izzo, but also how they lost, too, with so many self-inflicted errors, a million turnovers in the second half. So it wasn't just like they're outclassed. It's they just completely beat themselves, and Shaka Smart could not get them back, even doing breathing exercises still could not get them resettled.
With, by the way, let's not bury the lead, too. Three teams in the Sweet 16 from the Big East, none of them Marquette. That makes it even look worse.
Absolutely. And you talked about Coach Cal. You know, he's not there yet. He is not there yet. He is going down a path, though, that is reminiscent to what we're seeing of Jimbo Fisher. Championship. And now the longer you get from that championship, the more questions you have now. Again, he's not there yet, and he's still doing a better job than I think
Jimbo Fisher is doing.
And his
regular seasons are a whole lot better, yeah.
But it's getting to the point where it's like, you said, the fans are frustrated. Kentucky's, even recruiting-wise, is still not near where they have been in the past. They're not producing now. These star-studded NBA players like we're used to seeing when he first got there and kind of had that early run. it's sliding. And again, he's not there, but
2012 was the championship.
Heading back, right, to that path where
it's a long time.
It is. You are getting a long time from the championship, and you are now not really getting any towards, you know, it's not getting brighter, let's say, for Kentucky, just like it's right now, it's not getting brighter for A&M and Jimbo Fisher.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we'll be joined by a team that's just having a sensational year. They were picked fifth in their conference before the season did start. They ended up winning their conference. Now they are 33-3 on the year, and they'll be playing at Madison Square Garden coming up later in the week up against Tennessee. We'll be joined by the head coach of the FAU Owls, that's Dusty May, who will join us in 5 minutes when the Zach Gelb Show continues after these short messages.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Boyd attacking into the paint. Dish left corner, Greenlee three. Oh, that might be the gut punch. Brian Greenlee's three in the left corner. And it's 72-64 FAU. Quickly up the floor, Roberts in traffic. Lost the handle on the basketball. Boyd will push it up the floor. Ahead to Davis for the two-hand flush. Oh, the Owls are flying now. 10-point advantage with 1:16 to play.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
The mayhem of March Madness. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Florida Atlantic, the FAU Owls are going to the Sweet 16. And coming up on Thursday night, they'll be playing right here in our backyard at the world's most famous arena in Madison Square Garden. And the Owls on the year are now 33-3 with two big wins to open up the tournament with Memphis and then Fairleigh Dickinson. And now joining us is their head men's basketball coach in Dusty May. Coach, first off, congratulations. Really appreciate you joining us here for a few moments.
Thank you for having me on, Zach.
So how do you process it? FAU is going to the Sweet 16. When you hear that, what comes to mind?
I have to pinch myself.
When did it really sink in for you, what you guys were able to accomplish over the weekend?
It still hasn't, to be honest. I've said this over and over and over, and it's as sincere as I can be. When you're in the eye of the storm, you're on to the next thing. We're so focused on Tennessee now, trying to formulate a game plan, get our guys ready, get a schedule together, that you don't have time to even digest it. But I know just watching the film this morning, seeing your families in the back, our families in the background, our fans celebrating, how awesome it is to bring so many people together. But for those of us in the mix, we don't have time right now to feel too good about ourselves when you're staring down the barrel of the Tennessee Volunteers.
And that's what I love about this tournament, because we talk about upsets before, teams that you don't expect to go to a Sweet 16, potentially even Elite Eight. We'll see how far you guys could take this. And there's always a certain confidence, and you don't sense that the moment's ever too big for those teams. Just where does that confidence come from when you look at your basketball team?
Well, we got guys that love ball. They love to prepare. They love to hoop. So I think anytime you have guys that have played as much as our guys have, they're not afraid of the moment. They're not afraid of competition. And they've got a lot of belief in each other, where there's a lot of nights where a couple of our best players are maybe having an off game, and they look around our huddle, and they know some different guys are going to step up. Even Jalen Gaffney, a New Jersey kid who's been primarily a distributor for us last night, FDU went up 7 points, and he bangs in a big three, and he's usually not really aggressive looking for a shot. So I think just our guys believe that they don't know who, but somebody's going to step up.
And the game up against Memphis was wild, and then you guys are able to go on to beat Fairleigh Dickinson. Just when you look back at those two games, what are the real big takeaways from this weekend with those two games?
Well, like we've proven all year, our reputation is that we have really good shooters, and we space the floor, and we share it, and we shoot it well. We haven't moved the ball nearly as well as we did throughout the season, and partly because the way we're being defended, and we just haven't shot it well. We've still been able to find ways to win because of our scrappiness and grittiness, and everyone made such a big deal about FDU's lack of height being the smallest team in the country. I think we're only bigger than about 29 or 30 teams out of 363. So our guys have a lot of heart, a lot of fight. So just them being able to figure out different ways to win each and every night has been a pretty special deal.
Coach, I know these preseason polls turn out to mean nothing. Like, you could use them as motivation if you're not picked in the spot that you think that you should be, as Dusty May's here with us. Before the year, they had you finishing fifth in the conference. What type of team, though, did you think that you had before the season started?
Well, we were a little surprised that we were picked that low. But when you think about it, UAB had a team that won the league the conference tournament last year, went to the NCAA tournament, played Houston tough, and had everybody back and added some established players out of the portal. Western Kentucky had a lot back, and they added some highly acclaimed players out of the portal. North Texas, that the name speaks for itself, and the job Grant McCaslin and his staff have done there. They're perennially winning 25 games a year now, probably one of the best coaching jobs that he's done was this year. And then Middle Tennessee State actually beat us in Conference USA East last year. We were neck and neck going down the stretch, and they won the East, and we finished second. So, and they had everybody back as well. So the fifth is one of those things that it looks like you're underrated or undervalued, but in reality, there were four extremely talented teams that were picked ahead of us, and until we proved that we could do it, I get it. You know, it was one of those things where we had everybody back, we were on the verge, but we still needed to prove that we knew how to win.
I get it. You're always going to believe in your team and go to battle with your guys. But if I would have told you before the season, Coach, that we'd be sitting here in March and you'd only have three losses on the year, would you ever believe that?
No, absolutely not. I thought we would have between a 20 and 25 win team. And we thought our schedule we thought we overscheduled a little bit this year. We tried to find as many mid-majors that were picked first or second in the league. And some of those schools just didn't have the type of season that the prognosticators had thought they would. For example, we scheduled Bryant. They were supposed to win their league. Eastern Michigan was supposed to have the best team they've had. And those teams, not that they didn't have good years, but they didn't have they didn't have special seasons. And anytime you're scheduling at our level, we can't get high majors at home. We can't even get high majors on a neutral site. So scheduling's difficult. But we knew we had a chance to have a special season. Since last year, we had everybody back. We added Nick Boyd. We added Jalen Gaffney. And we felt like we were guard short last year and adding two more guards. We actually had probably too many, but the guys have really meshed well together and sacrificed a lot.
What has impressed you with this program and also the university with Florida Atlantic? I know that right now you're in your fifth season as the coach. How do you kind of look how the program has kind of grown, but also what's impressed you about the university?
Well, it's a booming university. We're in South Florida in an unbelievable place to live in Boca Raton. It's a little bit different than the hustle and bustle of South Florida. It's a little quieter. There's not the spring break crowd. It's a great place to raise a family. It's an awesome place to go to college. Our university, our campus looks like a five-star resort.
It does. I've been there. It's incredible.
It's beautiful. So, and our administration is committing to growing the university with athletics being a big part of that, in addition to the medical school and some other things. So it's a case of being here at the right place at the right time. And a lot of people have contributed to this. And then as far as our program, we felt like we had the right guys in our program that really fit our staff, that fit who we want to be. And these guys are hard workers. They're tough. They're competitive. And like I said, they love ball.
I don't know what your future will look like and how much longer you'll stay at FAU, but what's the long-term goal for this program moving on from here?
Long-term goal, just continue to get better and be in position to win championships every year. You know, we talked about it this year. In the last 2 weeks of the season, we want to be in position where we're competing for a championship. We were last year. We came up a little bit short. We lost two home games in a row that really set us back. But we just wanted to be in position to win a championship and the same thing next year. You know, I don't think we'll ever have a year where we keep everyone healthy like we have, where we have a complete team ego without any selfishness, without anything really changing despite the attention and accolades our guys were getting. So this has been a special year mainly because of the personality of our team more than anything else.
Coach Dusty May here with us for a few more moments. FAU off to the Sweet 16. They'll have a game at Madison Square Garden coming up on Thursday night up against Tennessee. Coach, you were a student manager at Indiana for Bobby Knight. What do you recall about that experience, and what did that mean for you all these years later?
Well, I now that I'm a head coach, I refer back to so many things that Coach Knight taught or did that I didn't even realize I was picking up at the time. He's just such an unbelievable teacher, communicator, and everyone in the program has to elevate their level of intensity, focus, preparation in everything that they do. So that experience definitely prepared me for the climb or the rat race or what you have to go through, the ascension of college basketball, where you have to work like crazy and you still may not get your break and you still might not win because everybody works hard and everybody puts a lot into it. But just, you know, I went there as a volunteer. You're paying your own way through school. You're working 40 to 80 hours a week just for the opportunity to learn from possibly the best teacher in the history of the game. So, you know, it's a different era now, but that's all I wanted out of it was I thought I would be prepared to be a high school varsity coach after I got out of college if I worked for Coach Knight.
Yeah, like when did you start to realize the vision? I know you were assistant coach for a long time, for basically two decades before you got this opportunity to be a head coach. But when did you start to say, okay, you know, I could be a head coach in college basketball?
Well, I've tried to prepare myself since I was young. My first experience after Indiana was at USC under Henry Bibby. And at that point, when I got on a college staff receiving a salary as the video administrative operation position, running camps, doing all that type of stuff, I knew that there was a chance if I got in the right situation and worked hard. And a lot has to fall into place. There's so many great basketball coaches at all levels that you have to get some breaks. And I was fortunate that several people poured into me and gave me opportunities, and you know, just grateful for that, because there's a lot of guys that can do this job that just aren't in the right place at the right time.
Had the opportunity of you being a student manager at Indiana just like come about? Like how'd you end up getting it?
Well, out of high school, I was recruited by NAIA's Division IIs, and I'd known Dr. Rink. I'd done some work for him, and I actually worked for one of his close friends, so that's how I knew him. And he always encouraged me that if I wanted to be a coach, I needed to go work for Coach Knight. I know you still want to play ball, and it's great, but if you really are serious about the coaching profession, you need to go work for Coach Knight. At that time, a lot of the managers had went on to do some pretty great things. Lawrence Frank, George David, a lot of those guys have been very successful in basketball when they left. And so at the last minute, I got an itch to go play, and I went to Oakland City University, a small school. I ran cross country and played ball there. And about 3 weeks in, I realized this isn't what I thought, what I really want. And my mom told me to finish the year. But at that point, I knew I wanted to go back to Indiana. I'd already been accepted into the university. So I started preparing to be a freshman manager as a sophomore. And fortunately, Dr. Rink and some people helped me get back in the door. And because it's very demanding, I tell people there were probably 100 to 150 applicants each year at that point. And for three or four spots, and usually out of those three or four spots, 75% at least are going to go to people like Coach Knight's former players' sons or people that are affiliated with the program. So there's usually one out of 100 spots that you can just go interview for and get it. So fortunately, I had some ins. They liked the fact that I could at least jump out and play defense, pass the ball, those types of things. So, it was hard, it was stressful, but what a great opportunity though.
It's unbelievable the story to now, like you look 20 something years later, you're coaching in the Sweet 16. It's really like a movie, your journey and your rise.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know this. Joe Pasternak, the head coach at UCSB, who just – they were eliminated the other night by Baylor. He was a student manager with me. Mike Schrage, who was on Duke staff, was the head coach at Elon. So there were three Division I head coaches that were all student managers at the same time at Indiana. So it's just a testament to what you learn, the principles you pick up, all those types of things to prepare you to go forward into this, like I said, coaching journey that – it's a marathon.
How'd you come up with the Australian rugby rules line? I was saying you study that before Tennessee.
Well, I don't even think I called it the Australian rules football or whatever the case. It was the most physical thing that I could think of at the top of my head. And I know people have taken that personally, but I'm a physical guy myself. When I played, I was accused of fouling about five times per possession. So there's nothing negative towards it. We're going to have to play with great physicality and discipline. But that's a compliment to them. I wish people would say that about us, that we're physical, we're tough, we're strong, we're competitive. Those are all things that I value as a coach. And it's a shame that people look at all those things as a negative. But it was the most physical thing that I could think of. And those guys don't wear pads like we do in the States playing football. So I know it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but it was a joke. But they're very, very physical.
I thought it was hilarious. But before we let you run, I know that you said it's always in the moment and you're figuring on to the next one, and this one's Tennessee. When you get on that plane and you're traveling to New York and you know that you're going to a Sweet 16 and you're going to be playing Thursday night at Madison Square Garden, and that flight over, outside of just the constant preparation for Tennessee, when you get a moment to reflect, what do you think you're going to be thinking about?
Well, Zach, actually, we came up today. Our band, cheerleaders, administration, families all went back to Boca last night on the charter. We took a commercial flight up this morning, just got here. I'm at the Marriott Marquis on the 36th floor, looking out my window right now, watching film, talking to you. So it's surreal for a guy from Greene County, Indiana, to be where you know these players have taken us. But it's surreal. It's awesome. But it's you know, obviously this is the biggest stage, the brightest lights, being in the Garden. I'm excited for our guys because I know there's no moment too big for them.
Well, enjoy it. You may want to make your way over to Katz's Deli and get a pastrami. All right.
Say that again. Which deli?
Katz's Deli and get a pastrami sandwich. I don't think they'll make you wait in line, Coach. You're a pretty big deal now.
Hey, this is the first time I've ever been recognized. My wife was annoyed. We go on Sunday walks. I'm walking around the neighborhood, and everyone's yelling at us. She said, can we please go back to being anonymous?
That's awesome. Well, Coach, great to hear your story. Your team's been fun to watch, and good luck coming up on Thursday.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you so much. There he is, Coach Dusty May from the FAU basketball team. Ack, are you okay with that sandwich recommendation? Katz's
Deli Pastrami? Yeah, but you gotta also have to tell him to go to Junior's. It's across the street from where they are, although he shouldn't have mentioned where he's staying.
Well, I think the security – I've been to the Marriott Marquis for the Heisman. I think the security is fine.
You get calls, you know.
Yeah, you're right. Tennessee's going to be calling him tonight.
You want to keep that under wraps. But I love his honesty for it, though. But you should do? You should have him have a cheesecake delivered to him.
At Junior's?
From Junior's. You know, they're right across the street.
But
I don't know if they'll do it.
The best one is in Brooklyn, right?
Junior's? Yeah, but the one across the street, I mean, you know, look, they're all the same. So.
Hey, Coach, if you want to take a little trip, Ack and I will bring you on an eating tour. We'll get you pastrami at Katz, and then we'll take you over to Peter Luger.
Yeah, but he could, you know, he can just run across the street, get a slice of cheesecake, and you know, or a whole one for the team, and they could share it together.
How about that?
It works.
We should do a segment. Something with Ack and the coaches. Just any coach that comes to town. Ack will take you all around the city.
That could be my next job.
Running with Rich.
It's like the Kramer reality tour. Yeah.
Nothing's better than feeling comfortable in your own shoes. Maybe you're a parent raising a little rock star or a tech nomad working from anywhere. Allbirds wants you to be comfortable in your actual shoes, too. Their wool runners, pipers, and loungers are so cozy you might forget you're wearing them. And they're crafted from natural materials that tread lightly on our planet. So get comfortable in your shoes. Get to know the wool runners, pipers, and loungers at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Some moves in the college coaching world, in the college basketball right now. Rick Pitino, who did lose to UConn in the first round of the NCAA tournament with Iona. After a few years of being at Iona, we all know the legendary coaching career Rick Pitino has had, and it's also been marinated in a ton of controversy. But when you're at Iona for a few years and you're allowed to coach in Division I basketball, eventually you know that another school's going to come calling. Now, it's not a blue blood, right? It's not a creme de la creme job, but it is a perfect fit when you're towards the end of your career, or maybe not because he did get a six-year deal, but you know what Rick Pitino has done at many stops, and even if you have controversy, if you win, you win. And a lot of times that controversy is looked past, and people say, okay, we're going to bring in a guy to win us games, or in this case, save a program, and that's what St. John's is doing. And Hickey, like, if you think about it, if you're St. John's, I don't think you could have made a better hire, because a big part about this in this new era of NIL and utilizing the transfer portal as well, you need alumni backing. And I read that Mike Rapoli is now going to start to get back in with St. John's. He wanted Rick Pitino to get there. And after all these hires and all these years, right, you get Lavin in there. You just bring in Mike Anderson as well. You bring in, obviously, a legendary player as well and a St. John's legend in Chris Mullen. But nothing was ever sustainable and nothing was ever leading to consistency where it didn't eventually fade out and end in a bad way. To go get Rick Pitino, if you're St. John's, if you're a St. John's fan, you got to be like a fat kid in a candy store today, because even though there may be some bad that comes with Rick Pitino, I don't know the last time a St. John's fan could be this excited for a program that just needed more life and needed a well-respected, well, when you say well-respected, you just know you have to separate the stuff that goes on compared to just the basketball coaching, what Rick Pitino brings to a university.
They got a winner. They got a winner. That's all you could say about Rick Pitino. And look, I hate him, to be honest with you, but he is a damn good coach. The guy wins. And like you said before, you can bring in former alum, former stars of the team, other guys that people like. If they don't win, you can't get the alumni back. You can't get any sort of momentum recruiting-wise back. The only way you get people back invested in your program is winning. And Rick Pitino, off the field aside, all the guy does is win games wherever he is. He took Iona. St. John's couldn't get to the tournament. Yeah. Iona has gone two times the last 3 years. The guy wins. He'll bring winning back here to St. John's.
In a year where St. John's is supposed to be decent, too. Like, there was some optimism just covering here, around here, about St. John's headed into the season. And look how quickly that faded. And this is the thing. The Mike Anderson hire the last time kind of showed you where St. John's is at. Like, Mike Anderson's a fine coach, but he's not an exciting hire. And the exciting hires that they targeted, they could not get. So, like, I understand some people say, yeah, it's great to have Rick Pitino, but ideally you'd rather have a young up-and-coming coach who could be there for 20-something years. But here's the thing. If that young up-and-coming coach, no offense to St. John's, goes to St. John's and has success, you don't think a bigger program is going to come calling? They absolutely would. For Rick Pitino, I know we talked about Iona being his last stop. That was just a bunch of nonsense. It was a stopgap until something better did come along. I don't think, right, a big, big, big job is going to come calling anymore for Rick Pitino. So when you're at the age of 70 and now with Jay Wright no longer at Villanova, and you've seen how many Big East teams have been in the tournament, and then three remain, and the team that won the tournament, the Big East tournament this year, is not in the tournament anymore because they lost to Michigan State in Marquette. If you are St. John's, I'm not saying you expect to go win a Big East championship right away, but at least that door is open where you're looking for who's going to be that consistent face of the conference for the foreseeable future. And this is, I would think, Hickey, right, the last big job of Rick Pitino's career, and this is probably his last stop, because I just don't think he's going to be able to elevate it to and parlay it to a much bigger job, even though St. John's is the biggest job in the world, but just where he's at with his age of being 70 years old and him signing a six-year deal.
I would agree.
But
I can't trust Rick Pitino, and that maybe not even trust, but if he turns St. John's around where, let's say in 3 years from now at age 73, if they're in two tournaments, maybe make a Sweet 16 appearance.
Look, bringing in a 74-year-old coach, though?
We'll see what dominoes fall and what teams come calling. If you need a quick fix, I hate to say it. Again, I thought
but
I'd be shocked.
But then he's 74, 75.
You give a 70-year-old a six-year deal. He said he can coach till 80 years old. If the life is still there, I guess I'll say this. If he turns St. John's around, we're talking about a program in the next in 3 years from now, two tournament appearances, his name will be in the mix.
And let's be real, too. This move makes you want to go to a game. Like, I could guarantee you one of the, what, seven or eight games that they play a year at Madison Square Garden next year, I'll be going. I knew someone that was on the St. John's staff, and I always said, you know, this old staff, oh, yeah, I'd go to a game. The last St. John's game I went to was a Villanova game years ago. I'm talking about that was at Madison Square Garden. There was a Barclays tournament this year that I went because my Temple Owls were playing in it. But next year, just from a draw standpoint, someone that really doesn't have a dog into a fight, I will definitely go just because Rick Pitino's coaching. And that's what I think it's big, and it's going to bring more people to the St. John's campus and also the Madison Square Garden when they're playing, because you know Pitino is going to do this big at St. John's, and we'll see if it could work. But everywhere he's gone in the college landscape, he's won. So I don't know where you turn them around to and what the ceiling is, but can you consistently get to the NCAA tournament with Rick Pitino as your coach at St. John's? I think you can. Now, the other move, Georgetown, we know, said goodbye to their one of their legendary players in right, Patrick Ewing. They go get Ed Cooley. If you're Georgetown, you have to be doing backflips, because just look what he just did at Providence. A lot of people think this is a lateral move because you're staying in the Big East, but if you're Ed Cooley, I thought he could have got a bigger job, I would say. But you go look at the history of Georgetown. I know they have not been a good program for a long time. I guess Ed Cooley just had enough at Providence, and now you go to Georgetown. It's always bizarre, Hickey, when you see a coach leave one school and go to another school, and it's in the same conference.
It's weird, but look, it is a step up. You have obviously Georgetown with a richer history in basketball. I think it's, you know, easier to recruit, especially location-wise there in Washington, D.C. I think there's just more resource. Like if you talk about basketball school, you think Georgetown first before Providence.
Oh, absolutely.
So resource-wise, you'll be better off if you're at Cooley. So you're right. All the success he had at Providence, that should only be greater when you have better recruits in your area and more resources to execute what you want to do.
And your guy, Micah Shrewsbury, still on the board? You got to be panicking about Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. Indiana guy. That going back home, the appeal. Notre Dame, even though they've backslid under Mike Bray, still a big-time job. Fingers crossed, Penn State. There's no reason not to shell out the cash to keep him there. This is the best Penn State basketball has gone in 22
Forever.
Years. First time they had a lead in a tournament game since 1991. Penn State basketball has not had a lot of success. Now that you have some, keep it. Keep it.
Well, yeah, I think that's the goal, right, to keep it. But if you're Micah Shrewsbury, Notre Dame comes calling, which they are, I think that's a tough job, especially with his roots to turn down. And by the way, I was surprised. We heard all this Penn State talk for the last 3 weeks. I didn't hear anything from you after the game. Didn't hear anything. No instant reaction video, nothing from you. I was disappointed.
What did I say? They lost.
Ah, come on. You got to be there when they win or lose, Hickey. Where were you?
I was there. I was watching the game.
You were silent. Nothing. If they would have won, it would have been a Twitter party.